Well, they've changed a lot, and they haven't changed a bit, I would say. It's really been interesting watching the ebbs and flows, and, you know, there's always something that we call interesting times in the book business. Starting back in the early 80s, we had the threats of discount stores and going through, oh gosh, thinking, you know, every year there's something. And I think what when people ask me how the book business has changed or what you've seen, I think really I've always felt so optimistic about we're going to make it through no matter what happens. I mean, part of it is that people in the book business are really smart people. Those that survived the really difficult times when the chains started to have a really strong presence, and then online book selling started to have a really strong presence, and the booksellers that maybe weren't as strong as they could have been, a lot of booksellers went out of business. But those of us who are still around are, you know, we're dogged, and we love what we do. And as far as the tattered cover goes, Joyce Meskis is a really, really smart businesswoman. She's passionate about the business, but she also would put her pencil to paper and figure out what we needed to do to get through whatever the next challenge might be. And here we are.
And aside from the changes in the industry itself, of course, and you have to weather whatever political storm is coming your way, you know, Joyce and the tattered cover was right in the middle of a lot of that, between banned books and then some of the political things that were going on. Remind our listeners of what was happening when Joyce really had to stand up and refuse to provide the list of customers who were buying certain books, because I think we tend to forget about all of this.
There was a case, oh gosh, it's probably been 10 years now, where, well, I'll preface it with, is that Joyce Meskis, who just this past year actually turned over ownership of the store to Len Vlahos and Kristen Gilligan, and they are incredible. But Joyce has always taken one of the strongest stands in the nation to protect the First Amendment. And so that's been an ongoing theme throughout the history of the tattered cover. There's always something going on that you have to be vigilant about, making sure that our right to read any constitutionally protected materials are protected. That said, about 10 years ago or so, two plainclothes agents came into Joyce's office and asked if they could have the records of an individual who'd bought a book that they were trying to connect to a drug case they were working on, and she refused. And it was, well, a very long, hard road from her refusing to a Supreme Court, Colorado Supreme Court decision that upheld her right to not reveal what our customers are reading. And it's a very long story that I won't go into, but the good news is that she prevailed and continues to be a strong supporter of the First Amendment. The interesting thing, and what I really want to underscore, backing up to your original question, is that the tattered cover supports the First Amendment, but we really feel like we are a home for all ideas and do not get involved in any other political issues at all. And we really stand firm with that, much to the disappointment of some of our customers who wish we wouldn't have this author in, or wish we wouldn't have that author in, because they don't like what they stand for politically. So I want the listeners to understand that even though the First Amendment is crucial to who we are, any other political issues are absolutely verboten to discuss or support as part of the tattered cover.
Arsene Kashkashian, has the Boulder Bookstore ever had to deal with such requests made by the FBI?
No, we haven't had anything that dramatic happen, and we are very thankful to Joyce. But, you know, Joyce putting herself out front there like that, and Joyce, the tattered cover kind of taking up that challenge, you know, kind of cleared the air that we didn't have to. You know, if she would have given in, they would have come to us probably for something else, you know. So when you have somebody who takes a stand like that and then that stand is upheld, it takes a lot of heat off everybody else. And to be honest, that was our experience. We didn't have it. I'm sure if Joyce would have given that information, bookstores all around the country would have been asked.
And she would not have given it, even however the Supreme Court decision came out. I think she would have not given it.
Yeah. We're reflecting on four decades of Kathy Langer's career at the Tattered Cover as a book buyer, now a bookseller. And you say that you have now, as you're looking ahead to retirement at the end of 2017, really embraced your role as a bookseller. What does that mean? It's more than just, you know, ringing up credit cards. I mean, do people come in and genuinely say, what should I read?
Well, that is, I think, the greatest joy of what we do is being on the sales floor and helping customers find the right book for themselves or as gifts, or they have an issue they're dealing with. And it's wonderful. You get such immediate gratification.
And in this day and age where there's Goodreads and there's every online forum available and recommendations by whichever online book seller you might be adhering to, you know, are people still coming in going, hey, recommend a good book for me?
Absolutely. And the conversations can be so fascinating because the first thing you do is ask, well, what have you recently read that you loved? And then you go from there and talk about different books. And it's a very enriching conversation on both sides of the conversation. And I know people who come in, especially this time of year when they're buying gifts. I have some regular customers who come in year after year after year, and I help them with the many people on their list, and it's just really fun.
Yeah, that's one of the most fun parts about it, you know, being on the floor at this time of year and being able to help people and seeing people you see year after year. That's great. You know, in your four decades, is there particular books or authors that really stand out to you that you had an event with at the Tattered Cover, or a relationship that you were able to get to really meet an author that perhaps you had admired and got to know somebody, or, you know, from that side of things, I'm always interested, you know, as a fellow buyer, is there something that really made an impression on you over those years, something a singular type of thing?
Well, there are so many. It's hard. I'm a little bit nervous to single anybody out. I will say that I've always been a huge admirer of Donna Tartt, and I've gotten to introduce her a couple of times at the store. Every decade, she brings a book out. And we've had a lot of celebrities, a lot of politicians of all ilks in the store, and it's just so fascinating to see them as people, whether it's, you know, Bill Clinton or John Irving or, help me out here,
President Jimmy Carter.
Yes, who's been to the store many times, and he's an amazing, amazing man. But when you're working with them during an event, you're with them for several hours, often very close by, and you just get to see a little more of who they are. You know, I've met a lot of celebrities and a lot of celebrity authors, and it's earlier in my career I was just so, you know, gaga over people like Paul McCartney. I thought I was gonna faint. Oh my God. But now, you know, as I look back over the 40 years, you know, I love all the writers, and it's really fun to meet them and very gratifying to get them to know them better after having read their books. But still, it's the people who I've known through those four decades or two or three decades that I'm friends with, that I respect in the industry. And you see the powerful people, the very giving people, the fun people, the smart people in the book business. It's just, that's the ongoing pleasure. It's fun to meet the authors, and that they're what allow us to do what we do. But having spent many years working closely with Arsen, that's what I really love.
I love it too.
Well, Kathy Langer is retiring at the end of 2017.
No, say it's not true.
Well, unfortunately it is, but she's had four decades in the book industry at the Tattered Cover as a book buyer and a bookseller. And we're reflecting on her career this morning. After hours at the Radio Book Club, a special podcast edition of the Radio Book Club, my co-host is always Arsene Kashkashian, another buyer at the Boulder Bookstore this time. Do you have a special, you know, kindred soul? What makes a good book buyer?
Oh boy, what makes a good book buyer? I better take notes.
Starting with, you need to be a good and thoughtful reader, but that's not really necessarily...
I mean, you can't read every book that you're going to buy.
No, you can't read any. So you have to pay attention to detail. You have to understand who your publishers are, what they do well. We have great relationships with sales reps who come to us and sell us the lists that are coming up into the next season. So you have to be open-minded. I always say reading People magazine helps because they're... And other things like that.
Entertainment Weekly sometimes for me.
There are a lot of things in popular culture that at this point I'm not that in touch with. So just keep your eyes and your ears open. I think it's also important to work with customers because you need to know your stores and you need to know who's coming in and what they're asking for. So just being an open, thoughtful person.
Has there been a book, either of you or an author, that you either... noticed early on, maybe they were with a publishing house that you wouldn't always pay attention to that became really big, or one that maybe slipped by you and you regret not having seen the potential early on?
You've left us speechless. You know, there's always so many that slip by you. You know, one thing I want to ask Kathy during this whole thing is how many books there are. It just seems like there's more and more and more books, and trying to... It's impossible for something not to slip by you. You know, you do feel great when you read a book. I remember years ago, I read Blindness by Jose Saramago. I thought, my gosh, this is a great book. Portuguese author. I thought this is an amazing book. And I made a throw-off comment to when my rep was there and a few other people were there. And I said, this guy's going to win the Nobel Prize. And then he won the Nobel Prize. I looked like a genius. So those are fun moments. But, you know, I mean... I remember Life of Pi. Okay, that's a book that sells and sells. And we sold a zillion copies. I bet you my lead buy on that was like a handful of copies. You know, I didn't see that as being, you know, the altering book that was, that it would be so huge. I'm constantly surprised.
Well, that begs the question then, how do some of these books turn into the huge, massive successes that they are? Without, you know, the ones that win the prizes, that's one thing. If you win, you know, the Man Booker, if you're even longlisted, that's going to be a boost. But there are some books that just seem to capture people's imagination, like the Life of Pi, mm-hmm. that then, of course, became a film. But, you know, do you know the dynamics of this? How did these take off?
Well, I think I'm happy to say that the publishers understand the power of the word of mouth coming from independent booksellers. And as many books as we might miss... they will sort of target us with books that may be from an unknown author or someone they're trying to build and get us excited about them, and then we start to talk about them and get everybody else excited about them. All the Light We Cannot See was a very good example, but I give some credit. I give a lot of credit to Simon & Schuster for bringing Anthony Doerr to the indies and letting us help them make that to be such a huge success.
I loved that book.
Yeah, and sometimes they'll have dinners for us, pre-publication dinners, so we can meet the author. With the Anthony Doerr book, I remember reading that in manuscript form. I mean, they made a point to get people like me and Kathy books, you know, 9 months before it came out. I mean,
even more.
I mean, I read that long before when it won the Pulitzer Prize. I remember thinking of it. It's like, really, it's still eligible? I read it like 2.5 years ago, but. But I got excited about it. Kathy got excited about it. Booksellers all around the country did. And that's one way. And I feel like those books are the ones that seem to last the longest. They just keep selling and selling. You can do the top-down way of making a book where you've got huge ads and, you know, you get people a blast of media right up front. And sometimes that does work. But the books that come from the bottom up through booksellers, they seem to go on and on and on.
One author that I got to know quite a few years ago that I'm really excited about a new kind of success she's seeing and the book is seeing is Hillary Jordan, who wrote Mudbound. And that is now a Netflix movie. And the book was so powerful. Speaking of unfinished business, it's just an amazing, beautiful book from Algonquin, I believe, which is a smaller publisher. And I'm a Facebook friend, so I've been watching her excitement about that. But it's someone who I really treasure, knowing her and being excited for her ongoing success.
So what books are on your stack? I remember we had a conversation years ago, because I probably read half, maybe two-thirds of new books, and then I go back about a third of my books. I'll read older books. But Kathy, you said to me, like, you're always reading ahead. And that part of that is just being a buyer. You know, there is a lot of pressure to do that, and there's a lot of joy to do that, to be the one who discovers the next great thing. But now that you're going to retire, do you have a stack? Like, what are you going to read back on now?
Well, I'm certainly going to read My Name is Lucy Barton by Elizabeth Strout. I have a book by Magda...
The Door?
The Door.
Yeah, Magda Szabo, S-C-A-B-O.
The Door, which is second on my list. I have not read any of the Elena Ferrante books.
Oh.
I have the whole collection.
I read the first one. I loved it. I think
that's a Neapolitan it's a trilogy, great book. Except there are four of them, right?
Yes.
It's a quartet now.
The quartet. And then I have a lot of galleys from this last year that I haven't gotten to yet. And then I'm just going to see. And I have a huge library that was my mother's, who would buy hardcover first editions and then write her name in it. So they're not worth anything anymore, except they're worth a lot to me because I'm going to be reading her Cheever and Saul Bellow and some older Ishiguro. I love him and that sort of thing. So more air quotes classics from the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah, there's a lot of great books. I read some Cheever short stories almost every year. I'm working my way gradually through that huge red book of his. And Saul Bellow, you know, I'm always entranced by his language. It's interesting that you know, books are always in conversation with each other. You know, you read a new book, and then it makes you think of a book from 20 years ago. And I find, and maybe you found too, sometimes if you ask an author about that, it's always fun to see, like, oh yeah, they also... They were thinking about Saul Bellow. You know, it's almost like a code in these books that the books are constantly talking through time. And it's kind of fun to go back and forth.
And Flannery O'Connor. I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait to go back to Flannery O'Connor.
We're reflecting on four decades in the book industry. Kathy Langer is getting set to retire at the end of 2017 from the Tattered Cover bookstore in Denver. And she's joining us this morning here with KGNU and After Hours at the Radio Book Club. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU. Arsene Kashkashian, the buyer at the Boulder Bookstore, is my co-host as always. And talking about all these books, never mind keeping up with the new books coming out, the ones in English only, never mind all the translations that are out there of amazing books being written in other languages. And then you have a back catalogue. I used to think when I was a child, I loved reading, I always have, my dream job would be to be a librarian or work in a bookstore, because I envisioned sitting in a chair all day reading books. Now, of course, that's not the reality. Do you get stressed out with trying to keep up with reading the books? At some point, does it become a chore?
Yes and no. It can be pretty stressful when you have a lot of books that you want to read. You have what I call favor reads, that someone sent you something and you really want to help them out and read it and give them a quote if you love the book. On the other hand, I'm pretty disciplined with, if it's not working, I set it aside. So I'll do 50 pages and set it aside. Life is too short. Sometimes I'll go back to it because it's the wrong time. But it can be stressful, yeah. I mean, you should see the pile normally by my bed, 30 books.
And sometimes you realize you miss the moment. Like, I put the book there meaning to read it. Maybe it comes out in August, say, and I put the book there in January. Then August comes and goes. The book is still there. I think, well, I'll read it now. It's getting some press. I'll read it. And next thing I know, it's on the remainder table. You know, it's like 2 years later. I guess I'm not reading that book, you know, And so the moments come and go so fast for some of these new books, and it can be, I can feel a lot of pressure sometimes to read a decent amount of books, or reading the book for the show and reading the book for the poetry book, or reading, just trying to keep up, or we're going to author dinners, you want to be able to say something to the author.
And then, of course, you know, you discover an author maybe two or three books into their career, and then you're like, I love this, I got to read all of them now.
Well, I can do that now. I couldn't do it before. And you know, ask me who my favorite author is, and it's usually who I'm reading right this minute. So,
yeah, and that was the difference. That's why I always wondered. I was like if I read an Elizabeth Strout and I come across her mid-career, then I'm going to read Olive Kitteridge and I'm going to read Lucy Barton and I'm going to try to find that time, sometimes to the detriment of my job. But part of me just needs to do that. And Kathy was like a superhero to me, that somehow she could be disciplined enough to resist that.
But I'm so disciplined. I was so disciplined.
That's kind of amazing. When you became the head buyer at the store, you know, after Margaret left, basically, what was that like? Tatter Cover is such a big store in the industry. It's not just becoming a buyer of just another independent. Did you feel pressure at that point in your career, or were you totally ready to take it on? How did you feel at that point?
I was ready. I really didn't feel a lot of pressure because I had spent so many years sort of working towards that. Margaret Maupin was an incredible mentor and really beloved buyer, and the publishers all loved her. I guess I felt a little bit of pressure filling those shoes, but I didn't feel any pressure at all on the buying side of it. It was more the persona mm-hmm. side of it. And I didn't try to be Margaret. I couldn't be Margaret. So I just had to be me.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things about both your bookstores, the Boulder Bookstore and the Tattered Cover, is that they are so well curated. And you can go in and know that there has been a huge thoughtful process in lining the shelves of the bookstore. And I know in the Boulder Bookstore and the Tatter Cover, you see recommendations by the staff. And I think all of that really develops the personality of the bookstore. I think people, when they hear the names of the Boulder Bookstore, the Tattered Cover, they know that that's a trusted establishment. I mean, does that weigh heavily on both your shoulders as you are the person who's really in charge with filling the shelves of those stores?
A little bit. Yeah, you want every person who comes through your doors to find what they're looking for, to be happy with your store, to be happy with the selection. And I know when I'm on the floor, I feel a fair amount of pressure to have that book, and if we don't, to find out why. Sometimes, well, there's many reasons why not, but I always felt a lot of pressure in that.
Yeah, I feel pressure too. I think the pressure got a lot worse with online book selling. You know, suddenly, you know, they were used to looking something up. A customer was looking something up and it would just say it was there, even if it wasn't necessarily there. Even if it was a book that Amazon was going to actually have to order in, but it appears on the site like it's there. And then you feel bad that you don't have this, you know, somewhat obscure book that's being published. And you're like, oh, I didn't buy it. I should have bought it. Now this customer's come in. And so it can be tough. And I try not to let it be demoralizing, because you can't, especially this time of year, you really start feeling bad if you don't have, you know, suddenly a book's on NPR and 10 people want it and you only bought 3 copies, you know, and that can be hard, I think.
What do you think have been the biggest challenges to independent booksellers in the book industry in general?
Our margins are very small. It's very hard to make money in this business. And when our competitors can sell what we need to sell for full price for a lot less money, it's frustrating because we literally can't afford to do that. So I think trying to level the playing field in the business has always been something that our industry has worked towards, and it's getting better. But I think it could be even better. I think being in the middle of the country is a competitive disadvantage for us, just mm-hmm. because it takes us a few days to get anything that we don't have in the store. And so when a customer wants something and needs it quickly, if they're in New York or Connecticut, they can get it the next day from that store. But we have to say, well, we can have it in, you know, 3 to 5 business days. And some people will say, well, I'll think about that. And I'll think about that is code for I'm going online. So that's very frustrating.
Yeah. Well, and also being in the middle of the country can be a challenge for events. You know, you Tatter Cover does a great job getting a lot of events, and we get our share of events. We'd like to get more, but it doesn't compare to stores you see in San Francisco and New York. There is a coastal bias on a lot of the different events too that Tatter Cover's done a great job fighting, as we have as well. I also think an issue that plays into the margins is the publishers over the last 20, 30 years have all been taken over by big media corporations. And so they're all trying to keep their margins big enough to satisfy their stockholders rather than what it was before, when it was either, you know, they were an independent business or there wasn't so much pressure for them to realize such a margin, which then affected it, what they were willing to do for us.
Now, neither of you have mentioned the transition from actual paper books and print to Kindles and reading digitally. Has that seen its day and gone? Are people back to books again? Or has that just not been as big an issue as I might have thought that it had been?
I think a lot of people still do read on their devices, but a lot of them have come back to reading regular books. I think it's always going to be an element in the industry, but it's certainly not something I even think about anymore, rather than 7 or 8 years ago when it was such incredible doom and gloom. Oh, nobody's going to want a paper book in 10 years. And that is not true. Books, the physical book is still very powerful and important.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I think it's a relative blip when I look at the last 25 years. I mean, yes, it's affected some, but not nearly as much as some of these other market forces. And people are rediscovering books. And when they come back to books, or when they do both, you know, they seem to almost appreciate the book again. They don't want the book to disappear. Maybe they did read on their Kindle for a couple of years or whatever. So I think the publishers are putting more effort into making the physical books look nicer. I think the books on the whole probably look nicer today than in 2005, say.
Well, Kathy, as you head into retirement at the end of 2017, what's ahead for you now in 2018, apart from a massive stack of books that you can read at your leisure?
A massive stack of books. And, you know, I like to say that my next chapter is an open book. I'm really not making big plans. I just want to kind of discover and see what happens. I have 3 little grandsons in town, and we'll be spending more time with them. But really, it's going to be a new adventure. I'm excited.
Well, Kathy Langer is retiring from the Tattered Cover after more than 4 decades in that iconic bookstore, buying books and selling books. And thank you so much for joining us on KGNU and the Boulder Bookstores After Hours at the Radio Book Club.
Maeve, it's been great. Thank you.